comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. We're here because you have a right to know, and we're here because you do matter. Tonight is K-Files night. Now, those who are used to hearing that, you already know what that is. If you're new to the show, you don't know. So here's the deal. We publish a free weekly newsletter. We send it via email. And on Friday night after the show, we begin to send it out. And barring any unforeseen difficulties, we have it all sent out by Sunday. We send it out in batches. It's not a continual stream. It goes out in batches. But it takes until Sunday morning early for us to get it all out. But it's free. Absolutely free. You ought to be getting it. And if you're not getting it, well, why not? All you have to do is go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Click where it says K-Files. It's right dead center in your screen. It's right in the middle of your screen. Click that. And subscribe. You'll get an email with a link in it that you have to use to activate that subscription. That's so we make sure we don't spam anybody. All right? So you activate your subscription, and you're good to go. Now, if you do that right now, you'll be in tonight's mailing of the K-Files. So there's no reason not to do it. It's free. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. Oh, and, you know, we don't rent that email list out. We don't loan it out. We don't let anybody else use it for anything. And you don't get hammered with all kinds of things trying to sell you something. So it's just for the K-Files, okay? We have here a members community. If you're new to the show, you need to know about the members community. Look at that ad on the left of your screen, and you'll see some of what's in there. Not all of what's in there, but some of what is in the members community. You get a lot of stuff, among which you will find the archives. We call those K-Pods. You get to watch the show live. You get your own blog page, your own friends page. You know, you send friend requests and accept or reject friend requests, just like on Facebook. Your own photo album, video album, forums, chat. UFO paranormal news feeds, and lots more. Special broadcasts, lots more. Now, it's only $7.50 a month. That's 25 cents a day is what that comes out to. $7.50 a month. Cheaper if you pay quarterly or annually. But if you pay monthly, it's $7.50 a month. And we'll give you the first 7 days free right now. It is a limited time offer, and that will be coming to a close very soon, so you need to get in on that while you can. Some of you have emailed me with information that you tried to go to my website and your mighty Norton program popped up something that said it's there's malicious activity or something like that on the site. The only malicious activity is the Norton program. Now, I was on the telephone with them for over an hour today, and I will tell you about that on the other side of this break. And then we're going to be talking about the Philadelphia experiment. We shall return, ladies and gentlemen, right after this. All right. right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I said I would tell you about the Norton deal on the other side of the break, so let's get that one out of the way. I've gotten a couple of emails just within the last couple of weeks where someone says, I opened your K-files and Norton popped up an alert that there's a malicious cookie activity. And they sent me, in one case, a copy of, you know, a screenshot of the Norton thing. And what it was saying was malicious cookie activity was the picture, the masthead right at the top of the K-files, which is absolutely ridiculous. There's no cookie. But I ran, just to be sure, I ran it through three other virus scanners and spyware scanners, two spyware scanners. One is you're familiar with is called, what is it called? S&D, Search and Destroy. And the other one is LavaSoft's Adaware. Absolutely clean, nothing there. But I got some others and even a telephone call where someone said, I tried to go to your site and Norton says there's some kind of malicious activity there, you know, and it gave me an alert and I couldn't get it to open your site. Well, folks, first of all, there's a reason why major corporations have moved away from Norton. A lot of major corporations have moved away from Norton. Why I moved away from Norton years ago. You figure that out. But our website, before any page gets uploaded, our website gets scanned. Those web pages are scanned with three different virus scanners, and with Spybot Search and Destroy, and with Adware. And then they get uploaded. They don't get uploaded until they go through those scans. We use very rigorous antivirus software. Really serious antivirus software. One of the antivirus programs that we use is used by many of the major data centers in America. And I guess throughout the world. It's called Komodo. That's one of the ones we use. Now, once it's uploaded, we also do something else. Once a week, we scan it using two online services to scan what's online, what's already up there. Well, it's clean. It's absolutely clean. But the mighty Norton is showing it as, you know, some kind of an alert for some people, but not everybody that uses Norton is getting that. So I was on the phone with them today, and their guy went online, scanned it online, and verified it's clean. And wanted to know what it says it's clean. What's your issue? My issue is that your program in people's computers is telling them it's not clean, and you're costing me viewers, and you know I don't appreciate it. So they have verified it's clean. You can do it yourself if you get the K files, this week's edition. I've done this before. I did it again. I put the link in there where since you're getting that on Norton, I'll let you see that Norton's online scan shows it's clean. The problem is the software in your box. The problem is the software in your computer. And I know if you're really religiously attached to Norton, you think I'm wrong about that, but I'm not. It's true. And so we also in the K-Files this week are giving you a link where you can download some real antivirus software, some good stuff, free. Stuff that's used by major data centers. So you'll be able to download that and use it, and you won't have to fool with that nonsense anymore. All right, the Alchemy Event 2011 is coming up. Be sure that you avail yourself of those tickets. Some of you are sitting on your hands and you're saying, well, I don't know if I can go or not. I want to go, and I'd like to be there, and I want to meet Kevin, and I want to meet Walter Bosley. I want to meet Mark Maverick, and I want to meet Joseph Farrell and Patricia Corey and Laura Eisenhower. And, you know, all these great people that are going to be there, you want to meet them. But I don't really, I'm really thinking about it. Well, there's nothing to think about. Is there? Make a decision. That's it. Now, you have the opportunity to get the special tickets for Sunday that have been made available. Those are $59. You've got the opportunity to do that through November the 1st. That price is guaranteed through November the 1st. There, you have to understand, if you come to the venue and say, I'll just get a ticket at the door, you're assuming there'll be a seat for you. There may not be. Okay, so you need to get the price won't be the same. So you need to get your registration done right now. And you can do that by going to my website and clicking on the Alchemy Event 2011 banner that you'll see on the website. It'll take you over to the page where you can register. There's a white area in the center of that, and it has all the various ticket packages. Scroll that white area down. The very last one is the special $59, and what that does is it gets you in the door for Sunday, for all of the events on Sunday, and that will include my presentation, and the only thing it doesn't include is lunch. But I mean, wherever you are on the planet, you'll have to pay for your lunch somehow. You'll have to provide for your lunch on Sunday anyway, right? So it doesn't include the lunch. But it includes all of the events, and I want to meet you. I want to see you out there. It's in Los Angeles, November the 11th through the 13th. All right, today is a special day. And if you've been to my website, you know what the special day is. You know that this is the anniversary of something that is legendary, truly legendary. So legendary, people are not really sure whether it happened or not. Some people say, yes, it did. No question, it happened. Other people say, nah, I'm not buying it. I don't think it happened. It's just a story. And what we are talking about is, of course, the experiment known popularly as the Philadelphia Experiment. Now, it happened on October the 28th, 1943. October 28th, that's today's date, right? So back in 1943, on this date, it is alleged that this very famous, although extremely secret, experiment took place. Again, it is popularly known as the Philadelphia Experiment, and it was supposed to be a naval military experiment. It involved, allegedly, the U.S. Navy destroyer escort called the USS Eldridge, and the purpose was to render the ship invisible to radar. That was the purpose, to render the ship invisible to radar. At this point, some 250 ships had been sunk by the U-boats. And so the Navy was getting, you know, they were really pretty uptight about that, and they were really pretty serious about finding some way to render their ships invisible to radar. Now, we know that's something the military has been interested in for a long, long time. The U.S. Air Force, of course, was very interested in rendering aircraft invisible to radar. And so their efforts to do that came up with the stealth fighter and the stealth bomber. And probably a lot of other stuff we don't know about. This experiment was called not the Philadelphia Experiment. I've heard two names for it. One was Project Radar and one Project Rainbow. It's hard to know which of those is correct because both of them are denied by the U.S. Navy. The U.S. Navy says there was no such experiment whatsoever. How do we even know about the Philadelphia experiment? Well, we know about the Philadelphia experiment because of a letter that was written by a man claiming to be Carlos Allende. He said that was his name, and he wrote it to Morris K. Jessup. Now, Jessup had published a book called The Case for the UFO. Jessup was an astronomer. He was a former graduate-level researcher. And he published this book, The Case for the UFO. And in this book, he expresses some theories about the various different means for propulsion that a flying saucer-style UFO might use. Just theories. And this caught the attention of this person calling himself Carlos Allende. And Carlos Allende sent a letter to Morris K. Jessup. On January the 13th, 1955, at that point I was 2 years old. And it's hard to imagine me as a two-year-old, isn't it? So on January the 13th, 1955, Jessup gets this letter, and the letter is from Allende, and Allende expressed to him in the letter that this experiment took place, and this, what we now call the Philadelphia experiment, and that he was a witness to it, and that it involved Einstein's unified field theory. And he said that Einstein actually had figured it out but kept it a secret because he didn't think mankind was ready to handle that kind of power. But he had figured it out. And this experiment was Einstein conducting an experiment, according to Allende, for the U.S. Navy, ostensibly for radar invisibility, but what he was really doing was going beyond that and using the Navy, the Navy's money, the Navy's ships and equipment to actually go beyond that and prove his unified field theory. So Jessup and Allende corresponded. They swapped information, lots of information. And as you know, the story includes Jessup being found dead in his car on the side of a road, ostensibly a suicide. It was ruled as a suicide. According to the stories, and there are many stories about the Philadelphia experiment, there are many stories about the Philadelphia experiment. According to those stories, the basic core of the story is that this ship, the Eldridge, had a small crew on board. Normally, that size ship would carry a crew of around 250 people. But they had just the bare necessity to run the ship for the experiment, and nobody else was on board. And when they fired up the experiment, not only did it work in terms of becoming invisible to radar, but it became invisible in visible light spectrum. It disappeared from visible light. Now, some have said that this ship traveled through time and space and wound up hundreds of miles away in a different year. That part was in the movie, you know. Some have said nothing like that happened. It just became invisible, and then it became visible again. And when I say some say, I'm not talking about witnesses. I'm talking about researchers. Because so far as we know, only one witness went public. Now, others would say, well, now, wait a minute, you know, there was this whole thing with Al Balik and Preston Nichols and you know, their claim that they were involved in that somehow. Yeah, but as far as we know, only one actual witness went public. After he went public, then the Al Balik story came out and the Preston Nichols story came out. And that doesn't mean they're not true. I'm just saying Allende is the first one. And he went public with this. Before Jessup died, Jessup, as I said, was an astronomer and a graduate-level researcher. And before he died, he was called to come to, called by the Office of Naval Research to come to Washington and consult with them. When he arrived, they showed him a paperback copy of his UFO book that had been mailed to the Office of Naval Research in a plain vanilla envelope marked Happy Easter. And the book, in the margins of the book, there were little notes written extensively throughout that book. And there were three different handwritings. So the Office of Naval Research officer talking with Jessup asked him if he had any idea who would have sent them this book and whose handwriting is that. We'll get back to that on the other side of this break. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about the Philadelphia experiment. Today is the anniversary of that alleged experiment. It happened, allegedly, on October the 28th, 1943. And when we went to break, I was telling you about Jessup, Morris K. Jessup, being called to the Office of Naval Research in Washington, D.C., and the reason he was called there was quite simply because someone had mailed a copy of Jessup's book that he had published, called The Case for the UFO, to the Office of Naval Research. And in this book, Jessup puts forward several theories about propulsion systems that could be used to power such a craft as a standard UFO. In the margins of this book, it was heavily notated and in pink ink. That was curious. I don't know that it's important, but it was curious. Heavily notated, three different persons carrying on a conversation, if you will, with their annotations. And they heavily notated in the margins next to his various theories about propulsion. And those notes indicated to the Office of Naval Research that these were people who knew something about what they were talking about. Further, there were some sort of side references, sort of offhand references to this Philadelphia experiment, which showed to the Office of Naval Research that these people had prior or superior knowledge about the Philadelphia experiment. So they questioned Jessup about this, and to make a long story short, it was finally determined that one of those people was probably, one of the people writing in the margin was probably this Carlos Allende that had written a letter to Jessup and had been corresponding with him. And so the hunt was on to find Carlos Allende. Now, we could go forever and ever and ever on the mystery of Carlos Allende and the search for him. He was very difficult for people to track down, very difficult for people to find. But they finally did determine that Carlos Allende was a man by the name of Carl Allen. Those who are watching our TV channel are looking at a picture, probably one of the last pictures of Carl Allen before his death. That's on the right side of your screen. On the left side of your screen is a certificate of seaman's identity, which is kind of like a seaman's driver's license. And this is Carl Allen. So his story about being a seaman and about being on a ship and seeing the Philadelphia experiment take place has some credibility in that we know he was, in fact, a certified seaman. It's quite interesting that Carl Allen sort of hid from public exposure and public view his entire life. And he shied away from interviews. He shied away from public attention. And he never changed his story. Now, some of the criticisms that have arisen around the Philadelphia experiment, around this story, some of the criticisms are that he made the whole thing up and that he had a history of psychiatric illness. Now, folks, I don't know. I did not know Carlos Allende. I did not know Carl Allen. Same guy. I didn't know them, him. So I can't say whether I think the guy was, you know, suffering from some kind of psychiatric illness or not. But let's think about this for just a minute. Let us consider that one of the oldest tricks in the book to discredit somebody is to create the aura of psychiatric imbalance, mental illness. You create an aura of mental illness around someone, and then everyone sort of raises their eyebrows and says, oh, you know how that goes. As a matter of fact, are you aware that right at this moment as I speak to you, you sit in peril of being accused of being mentally ill, and they've already devised the the diagnostic term that they can use to say you're suffering from that, and have you committed to a mental institution. If you do not trust the government and you express that and you think that the government is interfering with your life too much and you express that and you talk about the Constitution too much to suit somebody, they already have it in the psychiatrist list of diagnoses. And I forget what it stands for, but it's a ODD. And they can commit you for that. All they did is reach over into the old Soviet Union and pull one of their tricks out of the bag. Anybody that was a dissident was said to have mental illness, and they in the Soviet Union. And they would put them in mental institutions for treatment and re-education. That's already on tap for you. The diagnosis is in the psychiatrist's list of diagnoses that he can use. They can diagnose you with that because you talk about the Constitution too much, and off you go to the mental hospital for confinement, for treatment and re-education. Right out of the old Soviet Union, right here in the land of the free, the home of the brave. It's aimed right at you right now. So let me ask you, are you nuts? You don't think so. People around you don't think so. I don't think so. But what if you were picked up and diagnosed with this ODD and shipped off for treatment and re-education? When you came back, if you stuck to your story, whatever that is, whatever your story was that got you picked up, you stick to it. All that has to happen now to discredit you and your story is for them to say, well, you know, he has a history of mental illness. Right out of communist Russia in the days of the Soviet Union. So whenever I read that someone has an established history of psychiatric illness, I am automatically suspicious. Automatically, I'm suspicious. Because that's one of the easiest ways there is to discredit someone. So I don't know about Carl Allen. Maybe Carl Allen had some type of mental illness. But even if he did, does that make the story untrue? Now, what I hold in my hands is a printout of his last interview. And he said that this would be his last. He said this is his deathbed statement, although he was not on his deathbed. He was just very old. And he said, this is my deathbed statement, so I'll answer all questions but one, and that one goes to the grave with me. I don't know what that one is. But this was printed in the News of Colorado Sentinel Country. Published weekly by Old Weld Press Incorporated, located at 627 8th Avenue, Greeley, Colorado. The editor was John Dugan. He was the editor and publisher. And this is dated August 22nd, 1986. And it's pretty long. But here you have statements by the guy who 30 years earlier, more than 30 years earlier, had been saying to Morris K. Jessup, this experiment did take place. I saw it. And now here it is, 1986, and he's telling the same story. But he's giving us a few extra details. Now, there was a convoy of ships, and according to his story, he was on one of these ships. They were in the harbor, and he was on one called the Furseth, I believe is how it's pronounced. And he was standing on the deck, and he watched as this experiment took place in the harbor. And he said when they activated the force field around this ship, the Eldridge, that he said it expanded. It started around that ship, and it just expanded. And it kept growing, and it got to the point where it was right up next to his ship, and he could actually stick his hand into it, which he did, to see what he would feel. One of the things I found interesting about his statement to this newspaper is he says, you know, I've heard people say it was a greenish glow. I've heard people say that it was an orange glow. He said it was neither one. It was kind of ultraviolet. And he said, you know, it grew and grew and grew and grew and grew. Because, and Einstein was there, according to him, and was on a test ship, the test ship called the DE-168, according to Allende. And he was going by the name Carlos Allende at this time in his life. And he spoke Spanish fluently. He said that he was on the USS Furseth. Einstein was on the DE-168. And he said he reached in to this fog of force field with his right arm to see. He said it kicked. Curiosity, they say, that's why I did it. You might say I was satisfied. I had answered my question for the moment. I don't know what he means by that, unless maybe when he stuck his hand in there, it jolted his arm or something. I don't know. He said it kicked. So Einstein, on board the DE-168, according to Allende, saw him do that. He was standing right up on the deck of his ship, leaning way out over the rail and hanging on with one arm tight to the railing. And Einstein saw him do it. That's pretty important, because what's coming up next doesn't sound like somebody with mental illness. We'll be back. My apologies to those of you watching our TV channel for that long period of silence. I had a little audio problem over here, but we got that fixed. Those of you on radio didn't notice anything at all, and that's because it is, after all, a radio show, and we make sure that's working. You know, our priority goes there. But, we put priority in the TV channel, too. But radio comes first. So Allende is on board, or Carl Allen is on board this ship in the harbor. He sticks his hand, his right arm, into this fog, this electronic fog that's ultraviolet, according to him, ultraviolet in color. And Einstein from another ship saw him do it. So Einstein comes to talk to him, and Einstein wanted to know, what did you feel? What did you experience? What did you smell? Anything? Was there what was happening when you put your hand into it? And he said that Einstein, you know, he convinced Einstein that Einstein asked him, well, why did you do it? And he convinced him that he said, man, I was just deeply curious about what the science of this, what could cause something like this. And there it is. I haven't seen it before. And it was just scientific curiosity to want to know, what is this? So Einstein then loosened up and talked with him quite freely about the physics of invisibility. And he said over the next 2.5 weeks, Einstein kind of gave him a crash course in the physics of invisibility. Now, so far you might say, well, that, okay, all of this sounds pretty much like a hoax story, or the guy is mentally ill. Well, and he also tells the newspaper, this is all in what he told that newspaper in California, in Greeley, California. He tells them that all of this is based on Tesla technology. So I'm going to read to you now a couple of things, and listen to this. What Einstein really was working on was a starship propulsion. All right, now when was it that Allende said this? Well, he said it. It was published August 22nd, 1986, in that newspaper. So sometime just shortly prior to that. And he said Einstein was really working on a starship propulsion. You have to realize that this was before rockets. This was before NASA's space program. This was Einstein's test of space travel, starship drive at faster than light. What Einstein proved was that invisibility is a precursor to propulsion beyond the speed of light. Invisibility is nothing more than the precondition to a practical utilization of the magnetic field related to the Einstein tunnel propulsion system. Now that doesn't, I mean, you know, this is a sailor. This is not a physicist. And yet, he's speaking in terms that sound very educated in this, isn't he? He doesn't sound like just a nut on the corner. Well, there's a whole bunch of other stuff in here, and it's interesting. I just noticed that this conversation took place on August the 14th, 1986, because that's the reason that's interesting is that's my birthday. Carlos was 61 at the time, and he says this, listen, America has had the answer since 1943. All the answers are right under the nose of NASA and the Department of Defense, but they're still afraid. And he says the issue is that it worked. The experiment worked, and that's what scared them. And then he goes on to describe that as they did this experiment, the physics involved in this is that it stops the orbital motion and electrons are slowed to a stop. That moment when they do stop, the enormous distance in atoms becomes apparent to the eye. If a nucleus were the size of a pea, the first electron shell would be about 2,500 miles out. Mostly, he says, that is an enormous distance, mostly empty space. When the electron shell orbital motion is stopped, the illusion of solidity is removed. That's the basis of invisibility. You're simply seeing the empty space. Maybe mental illness, but doesn't that sound like someone who, even if he had some mental illness, knew something about this? I mean, that certainly is worth investigating. One of the things you have to remember is, because I know what's going to happen, when physicists hear this, they'll say, well, that goes against this law or that law of physics. You have to understand, there are no laws of physics. There are descriptions of our current understanding of the laws of physics, or our current understanding of the way things work. We call those laws of physics, but they're not laws of physics, because the universe out there is doing stuff every day that doesn't match our so-called laws of physics. The universe does stuff all the time that simply doesn't match our current understanding. He says the last step in this propulsion is to utilize the Einstein tunnel theory that will triple the speed. Proof exists right now that we can travel at 4.5 times the speed of light. That's what Carlos Allende said. Now, there are people that will say, well, there's no corroboration, there's no proof that he had any conversations with Einstein. Okay. So, how did he learn about this physics stuff? And everything that he talks about really does line up pretty well with things we know that Einstein was working on and that Einstein was interested in. Carlos Allende, Carl Allen, a very mysterious man. The Philadelphia experiment, we know about it because he wrote a letter to Morris K. Jessup. And there's a little interesting note here in this article about Morris K. Jessup. Jessup was found in his car on the side of a road, having gassed himself with carbon monoxide. That's what they said. Allende says that didn't happen at all. Morris K. Jessup killed the man who was sent to kill him, took his identity, and then vanished. And Allende says, and that's why they never did an autopsy on the body of the alleged Morris K. Jessup. And he said, you know how I know? Because I met him and talked to him 2 years after he was supposedly dead. Well, it's an intriguing story, and it's one that Carlos Allende stuck with. He never gave up on it. His last statement about it, published in this newspaper in Greeley, Colorado, was the same story he had told for years, and he never changed it. I don't know. That doesn't sound really mentally ill, does it? We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here, and I think you'll be glad as well. We're talking about the Philadelphia experiment, and this is the anniversary of the famed, legendary experiment. Did it really happen? Well, you know, it is all the more mysterious because of Carlos Allende himself. He really didn't seek out a lot of publicity for himself on this. He really tried to stay out of the public view. He hid from reporters for 30 years or so, and gave this interview to the newspaper in Greeley, Colorado, where, by the way, at the time he was living. And he said this is his last statement. He's not wasn't going to make any further press statements. And So they called it his deathbed statement, although he really was not on his deathbed. This took place in a park. The reporter met him and talked with him in a park in Greeley. People were walking by and knew him and nodded and smiled and waved. And, you know, it was very, very public. And so it's not actually a deathbed statement, although that's the way they publicized it. It is his last press statement, apparently. And the story he told was the same story that he had told to Morris Jessup. The same story he'd been telling all those years. It didn't change. He did give us a little bit better insight into some of the details of the story. And he said, you know, this was all about Einstein using the U.S. Navy and their material, their resources. He and his team were using the Navy to test, to run their own experiment, to test their own theory, right along with doing this for the Navy. So what the Navy wanted worked, but it went way beyond that and proved that Einstein was right. And it was all about a propulsion for a starship, long before there was a NASA, certainly before, long before there was anything called Star Trek, Star Wars, or any of that sci-fi stuff. And he was working on a propulsion system for a starship. And Allende said, this was in 1986, he said to the reporter that proof exists right now that we have the capability of traveling 4.5 times faster than the speed of light. That was in 1986. 1986. It's very interesting, isn't it? Interesting because, well, it's a fascinating story, of course. But interesting because what's involved here, at the very least, is the use of really high-energy electromagnetics. And right now, NASA is designing something called the 100-year Starship. If you didn't know that, then you haven't been listening to this show. They are designing the 100-year Starship. Mr. Warden, W-R-D-E-N, Warden, is in charge of that program, and he said before the media in Hawaii, I believe that's where he was, that this Starship will be using a completely new kind of electromagnetic propulsion. The very thing that Allende said Einstein was working on in 1943. He said it in 1986, that Einstein was working on that in 1943. Long before there was a NASA. So, is the story that Allende told us, is it true? I'd like to know what you think about that. You know, if it's not true, it really has some interesting pieces of information that have been sort of corroborated by time. I just gave you one. That is that in 1986, Allende said that in 1943, Einstein was working on propulsion for a starship. That's what this experiment was all about. And now, what have we got? Now what we have is NASA designing the 100-year Starship using a completely new kind of electromagnetic propulsion. Sounds like the same kind of thing that Allende was talking about. Carlos Allende, the Philadelphia Experiment, October 28th, 1943. Now, I know a lot of you have read, I mean, there's a bunch of books about this. I think there's over 20 books about it. A couple of movies, a host of documentaries about it. Now, I know you've either read the books, or you have seen the movies, or you've seen the documentaries, and you really have an opinion on this. So what does all of this matter? So what if it's true, or so what if it's not true? Well, you see, if it's true, here's the deal. Let's say that it's even just a little bit true. Well, we have Allende telling us in 1986 that we had the capability then to go 4.5 times the speed of light. So any part of this that proves up makes us have to raise an eyebrow about that statement and consider the possibility that in 1986 we could travel 4.5 times the speed of light. Possible, huh? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia.
Hey, Steve.
I find this topic intriguing, and it reminds me of statements made by Conrad Galen, and I know you know who Conrad Galen was.
Yeah.
He was the head of SS intelligence, and later on became the head of the CIA field offices in Europe. Mm-hmm. He said that all of Tesla technology was channeled to the Nazis, and I'm sure it was preserved at levels higher than Germany. And after the war ended, I'm quite sure that this technology continued to be developed, and it may have even been channeled back to Einstein, who implemented it in this program with the Philadelphia Experiment. And there's just no question in my mind but what this Tesla technology, which has continued to be developed, is being used in our parallel space program and other things that we're involved in. There's no doubt in my mind.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Is there any doubt in your mind as to whether this Philadelphia experiment took place?
Well, I definitely believe it took place. It had to have taken place. And I believe that Carl Allen or Carlos Allende was probably on the up and up. I believe that he had conversations with Einstein himself. Otherwise, he must have spent the rest of his life skulking around the libraries of MIT or the JPL laboratories or Cornell or someplace.
Yeah, and I encourage people to go read this online. He said some things that the average person would never even stop to think about. Now, you know, one thing that really impressed me, Steve, was the concept that if you stop the orbital motion of electrons, it becomes, the effect becomes visible to the eye. Now, the reason it becomes visible to the eye is that the atom is mostly space. It's just space. And that's what causes the invisibility, as you see the space. Now, that's a cool concept, isn't it?
And that space is not just dead, empty space either. If we do a little bit of reading into the work that, I'm trying to think of his name, the guy who's developing quantum subkinetics, Paul LaViolette, Paul LaViolette. He tells us that things are based in this ether bed, and the ether bed is alive, and things are happening within a chemical fusion reaction process instead of the dead mechanistic concept that I'm groping for words here, that are conventional physics that were being fed in high school and undergrad, college, all that stuff. That's stuff that they want us to know. They want us, our minds, to be limited to thinking in that paradigm. But the powers that be actually have a grip on a much different paradigm, much more vast, and the possibilities are endless. And I'll go ahead and let you and your other intelligent listeners call in and continue to comment. Kevin, thank you for taking my call.
All right, Steve, thank you. Excellent call. And I want to hear from you. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you are outside of the USA or you're outside of Canada, we understand that a long-distance, international long-distance call can be expensive. And so for you, if you don't wish to give us a call, if that makes you nervous, then you can just use the flash message option on the website. But you have to be outside the USA and outside of Canada. If you're inside the USA or Canada, give us a call. What do you think? This is certainly an interesting turn of events that Carl Allen or Carlos Allende tells us about a propulsion system that was involved in the Philadelphia experiment that is now apparently something very like it being used to design the 100-year starship by NASA. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
I'm going to take that channel, the Tesla channeling, Tesla, the Nazis channeling of Tesla technology one step further and make it, suggest this to anyone who wants to know what's going on. If you can astral project, there are the Akashic records, but there is also a universal database of information. Ask it what you want to know. You will receive your answer.
Okay, so what do you think about this?
I honestly don't know.
Do you have any opinion, one way or the other, as to whether this Philadelphia experiment actually took place?
I'm inclined to think it did, but I stick with my three-word answer that's honest. I honestly don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's an honest answer. Do you find it kind of interesting, though, that in 1986, Allende tells the newspaper about this propulsion system, that this is what it was all about. It was a starship propulsion system. 1986, and now similar technology being used by NASA, apparently, in their new 100-year starship. It kind of makes you think he might have been telling us the truth.
Go ahead.
No, it kind of makes you think he might have been telling us the straight story here.
Now, here's my thought on Carlos Allende and his story.
Uh-huh.
I have a similar story, and doesn't have anything to do with physics or anything like that, but it's a story I will never change. I was standing 8 feet from a buffalo in the wild, and I will never change that story. But if he did not change his story, there ain't nothing wrong with him. And yes. So far as NASA using the same technology, I would say it's possible it's similar. I don't know if it's the same, but it's something that sounds similar.
Well, also, he said in 1986 that at that point, proof exists. Let me read it exactly, if I can find it, because I want to get it right. Here we go. Now, this is his statement to the newspaper in 1986. Proof exists right now that we can travel at 4.5 5 times the speed of light. Okay, so if we had that in 1986, then this new propulsion system must be something that goes even faster than that. The thing is, the fact that they're building a starship called the 100-year starship, and they're using a propulsion system that they say is a new electromagnetic propulsion system. And that sounds very much like what Einstein was working on, according to Allende. That put all that together, it leads me to think that this statement about that proof exists that we can travel at 4.5 times the speed of light right now, that might be true. And that was in 1986.
Yeah. No, it was earlier than that.
He said it in 1986.
Carlos Allende, go ahead, just a second. I honestly don't think Carlos Allende was in contact with the physicists back in 1986.
No, he was in contact with the newspaper, and he said it in 1986.
That's when he said it.
That's what I said.
But what I'm suggesting is that he knew years before that that the proof existed we could travel 4.5 times the speed of light.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. But he made it public to the world in 1986 by talking to the newspaper. So
yeah,
he's saying it in 1986 at a time when, you know, in 1986, what are we doing? Shuttles?
And not very good, not very effective ones either.
Yeah.
They got us up there and down, but they were very, the energy costs were too much for what they were used for.
Yeah. All right. Well, Brent, I appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
I have one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Real quick suggestion.
Uh huh.
On your definition of the quote unquote laws of physics,
uh huh,
there are no laws of physics. There are just descriptions of observations of what we think is happening. Because we honestly don't know.
Well, that's what it means the same thing. They're descriptions of our current understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, it's based on observations being made by people, and people are not perfect. Therefore, every observation is imperfect. So the law, so-called, is flawed from the start.
Law is flawed before it even got made into law.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, Brent, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. All right, what do you think? You think this Philadelphia experiment actually took place? Now, I will tell you. Somewhere along 1959 to 1960, my dad was talking about it. 1959 to 1960, I can remember my dad talking about this. How did he know about it in 1959, 1960? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
Hope you had a great day.
Oh, yes. I have a great day every day. Every day when you wake up, you won. You could have died while you were asleep, and you didn't. You won. That's a great day.
I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, I don't know if you're interested or not, but I actually knew Al Bielek. I knew him personally.
Okay.
And So I kind of spent time with him on several occasions, you know, on the phone and in face-to-face at a convention one time. I tend to think that what he told after looking at him was pretty much right, spot on. Of course, you know that I knew Preston Nichols as well.
And Preston has been on the show.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know that. And so, you remember, you and I have had these conversations before about our secret space program.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this stuff is tying in with our secret space program. All of this stuff that Einstein worked on using is, Lindy allegedly said, Tesla technology.
Mm-hmm.
And And you talked about Morris K. Jeffers' book. I have a couple of his books, The Expanding Case for UFO and his almanac or his annual, UFO Annual. So
what do you think about the Philadelphia experiment, Mike? Did it happen, or is it just mythology?
In my humble opinion, it actually happened. The ship disappeared from Philadelphia Harbor, mm-hmm. appeared in Virginia, mm-hmm. at the Navy port down there, disappeared after a few moments and reappeared in Philadelphia Harbor again, this time of major consequences, but I'll let you discuss.
Do you think that Allende's story is straight, or do you think he's just mentally ill and making this up?
Based upon what's happened since 1943, I would tend to indicate that his story has been supported.
Okay. All right, Mike,
and
I appreciate
it. Making a definite statement, that's about as close as I'll come to that because I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
But based on the information that I've received over the years, then I tend to say that look around us, our secret space program, this is not something for NASA. NASA here again is taking the blame, the lead, ever what you want to call it, in this new super space vehicle that they're developing, even though we know that they've already got these things flying.
Mm-hmm.
So, I tend to go with the Philadelphia experiment.
It's been genuine, huh? All right. Well, Mike, I appreciate the call. Thank you for your thoughts on that. You know, I'll tell you this. I know someone who has told me that he has seen with his own eyes, he has met and talked to surviving crew members from that ship. That's as much as I can tell you. I cannot tell you more than that. If that person decides to call in and tell you more, great. You'll find it interesting. But I cannot tell you more than that. Surviving crew members. Well, it is said that those crew members that were on board the Eldridge when this allegedly happened experienced some very traumatic changes physiologically. We've heard stories about some of them being embedded in the metal of the ship and some other things. That we'll talk about when we come back. Caller, can you hang on through the break? Well, I guess maybe by that time you'll be listening to the telephone instead of the radio. We will return, folks, right after this, so don't go away.
America. And you're listening to The Kevin Smith Show, like no other talk radio on earth.
All right, welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. I think our caller dropped away, but let's see. Caller, are you still with us? Oh, brilliant. Okay. 623-444-5889, or you can send us a flash message if you are outside of the USA and outside of Canada. We have Ross from the UK with a flash message. If stopping the orbital motion of the electron made the ship invisible, maybe reversing the direction of the orbital motion might make the ship go back in time. Just thinking out loud. If invisibility is the precursor to using the faster-than-light drive, that could explain why many UFOs suddenly seem to blink out of sight. I agree, Ross. I think that's You've made some great observation there. I agree. I thought about that earlier, and then I forgot about it, and you know, I got busy with the show and I didn't mention it again, but that thought occurred to me that we see UFOs and they just blink out of sight. They're gone. Well, maybe they just went into hyperspeed or warp drive or above light speed or whatever. I don't know. But certainly what Carlos Allende said doesn't sound like the ravings of a madman. You know, the most suspicious thing in the discrediting, to me, the most suspicious thing in the discrediting, or the attempted discrediting, of Carlos Allende and his story is this stuff about, well, he had a long history of psychiatric illness. Now, he lived in Greeley, Colorado. People all around there knew him, and he was well liked, he was well respected. There was no indication whatsoever from his friends and neighbors that this man had mental illness. None. Now, that's very suspicious. Very suspicious. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is your friend, Elias, Portland.
Hello, Elias.
Hi there.
How are you doing? Yeah, we're waiting. Elias, are you there? Well, Elias, we're not getting any audio from you. Apparently, something wrong with your telephone. I don't know. The whole thing about, you know, this guy being mentally ill sounds really like the classic disinformation attempt at discrediting someone. It really does. And they've used that against a number of people, you know. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin. This is Elias again. Sorry, my phone got disconnected.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, what I was saying was, related to what you were saying about controlling the spin of the electron was what created invisibility, and then that was the first step before ship drive. I'm reminded of David Sirita's video where he breaks down a bunch of the NASA footage of UFOs in orbit, and he, to sum up in less technical terms, he basically says that somehow or another, what the ships do is in order to go faster than light, physical matter we know can't go faster than light, but what the ships do is somehow or another they up their energy charge or their vibrational frequency and actually become energy by raising their level of charge, more or less, is what he says, and then that allows them to move faster than light. Maybe this is exactly what we're talking about, by controlling the spin of the electron. Maybe that's how they do it.
Well, yeah, very well could be. But, you know...
you know, that's why he says they show up on the ultraviolet cameras. As soon as they become invisible to the human eye, they show up on the ultraviolet cameras, infrared cameras, mm-hmm. because their energy level has gone beyond our visual frequency, but they're still there, just vibrating at a higher energetic frequency.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, this whole concept that about, you know, stopping the orbital motion of the electrons, and that's what causes the invisibility, and it's a precursor to faster-than-light propulsion. That whole concept is very, very interesting to me, and honestly, it's not something that I had read or that I had thought about until I read this newspaper interview with Carlos Allende today. It's pretty interesting. It's one of those things, Elias, that I just kind of have to scratch my head and say, well, now that one I have to think about. And I really have to work that one over in my head. But that's okay. I like puzzles like that. It makes sense to me, conceptually, that if you stop the orbital spin, what you see is the vast space between the electrons and the nucleus. And when you see this, when that becomes visible, then everything else that is being surrounded by that field becomes invisible.
Absolutely. It's like if you've ever seen one of those pictures that people take where they hold a light on the end of a string, and then they stand in one position, and then they spin it in a circle lateral to their body, and then turn their body as they do it over a time lapse on a camera. It looks like they're standing inside an orb of light, but they're just spinning a light on a string in a circle and then turning with the lens open. It's the same idea. Like an electron is moving so fast that to our eye, it just creates a solid physical thing that your eye can see. But as soon as it stops moving, it's just a tiny little light, and so we don't see it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do you think about the Philadelphia experiment, Elias? Did it happen, or is it just mythology?
Well, my thought on it is that, along with the Montauk program, which is related to it, I think that those things happen. Whether they happen exactly the way people like Stuart Swerdlow and Preston Nichols and Al Bielek say they happened, that's sort of another question. I think those guys, I have a couple different possible ideas about their stories. I mean, on one level, they could be disinformation. On another level, those guys could really honestly believe what they're saying and have been controlled to say what they say. Or, you know, it could be entirely real.
Okay, but let's forget about them. Yeah, let's forget about them. Let's focus on Carlos Allende, the guy who brought us the Philadelphia experiment and who never changed his story.
I think the wise thing to do, because I think his information is the most verifiable of what we've got.
Uh-huh. So do you think that his story about this experiment, do you think that's true and that it really happened? Well, we've lost you again, Elias. Sorry. Don't know what happened, but we lost Elias. What do you think, folks? I mean, you know, this, to me, you've heard me do this. You've heard me present you with information and then say, well, in time, we'll know. Time will tell. Well, there's been a lot of time now on this story, as we have it from Allende, and some of it looks like it is corroborated, at least in part. What do you think about it? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. First name, and where are you calling from?
This is Leah from Tennessee.
Hi, Leah.
Hey, yes, some excellent callers.
Very excellent callers tonight.
Really interesting.
Uh-huh.
One thing, well, obviously, if you can't prove it didn't happen, it's more likely it did. And nobody has put any information out there to say that really prove that it did not happen. Plus, you can't help but think about the date. I mean, 43, then you got the battle in Los Angeles and Roswell, stuff like that, all in the same time period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, to me, this is kind of like, in a way, it's kind of like Bob Lazar's story. You know Bob Lazar, right? The guy that...
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. He was a guy that said that he was a physicist working out at Area 51 and that his job was to work on back engineering recovered alien spacecraft. And a lot of people have really poo-pooed his story, and yet... What's happened is, as time has gone on, bits and pieces of what he told us have been corroborated, and it's appearing that he told us the truth. And, you know, I think, Leah, one of the big things in the corroboration of his story is Boyd Bushman, who was the head of Lockheed Skunk Works. And he points to Lazar as proof of what he's saying in a video that he shot with, David Serena.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, he uses Bob Lazar as corroborative evidence for what he's saying.
And look what they did to him. They tried to massacre his reputation right off the bat, too.
Yeah, that's true.
And anybody who reported UFOs or anything else. So the more they tried to say he was crazy, the more I looked at it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, one of the big caution signs, folks, when somebody's telling you about this kind of stuff, and then all of a sudden this information starts leaking out that they have mental problems and they have a history of mental problems, big caution sign there. First of all, it's probably not true, and secondly, could those mental problems, if they really exist, be a result of what they've been put through because the story's true?
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
It could be.
Yeah, I've often wondered that myself.
Mm-hmm. So,
but it's a great show. This story has always fascinated me.
It fascinates me. I remember hearing about it when I was a little kid, and my dad was talking about it. My dad was formerly a Marine, U.S. Marine Corps, and he was talking about this. And this would have been before books began to be published on it.
Oh, wow, you're lucky.
Yeah, you know, he said that he heard people on board ships talking about it. And he didn't know personally anything about it. He didn't see it. He didn't, you know. But he heard other people talking about it and saying that some of the sailors would just disappear. Some of the ones that had been on board the Eldridge would just vanish from sight, and a little bit later they would be back.
And have you heard anything about what happened to these guys after?
Yes. But I have to tell you two things about it. I have to tell you two things about that. One, I have heard and cannot verify that information. It's not even possible that I could ever verify the information. But I heard it from someone who, as far as I know, has never lied to me. And number two, I don't have permission to talk about it. So, sorry. Look, we have a break taking over. Do you want to hang on through the break, or does that do it for you?
That does it for me. But great show, very interesting. I want to get and let some more interesting people call.
All right, thank you. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Hang in there. We shall return. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm Kevin Smith. We are on Final Approach. Today is the anniversary of the legendary Philadelphia Experiment. And I thought it appropriate for us to dive into some of the information we don't normally hear about the Philadelphia Experiment. And that is what Carlos Allende himself said in this final interview that he gave to any member of the press. He called it his deathbed statement, so they called it his deathbed statement, although he was not on his deathbed. He was elderly, but he was not on his deathbed, and the meeting with the reporter took place in the public park right there in Greeley, Colorado, where he was living. Like I said, number one, this thing about that he had a long history of mental illness. Well, okay, maybe. I don't know. I have no idea how real that is. But when I read that, as a reason why we should not listen to what somebody says, I am very, very suspicious of it. Because that has been used by governments around this world for a long time to discredit people saying things they didn't want them to say. As I told you, now, right at this moment, there is a diagnosis in the psychiatrist's list of possible diagnoses for someone who doesn't trust the government, who thinks the government is wrong and interfering with their lives, and who talks about the Constitution too much. They can diagnose you with this mental illness that they've created, that they've just made up out of thin air. They can diagnose you with that, have you picked up, have you put into an institution for treatment and retraining. Right, a play right out of the old Soviet Union playbook. Right here in the land of the free, the home of the brave. Right here where you think you're free. Just talk about the Constitution too much and you'll wind up in one of those places. Say you don't trust the government and you'll wind up in one of those places. Or you could. Playbook right out of the old USSR. Kind of brings to mind that Beatles song, doesn't it? Back in the USSR. Yeah. It's almost to the point where if you want to visit the USSR, you got to come here to do it. Oops. I guess I've just had a case of mental illness. Straight jacket is on the way. That's very, very suspicious, isn't it? That whole thing about his alleged mental illness. So let's assume he had some problem with mental illness. Could that have been caused by what he was put through as a result of talking about what he talked about? Could that have been induced? Could it have been a byproduct of him exposing part of his body into this fog? Because it is said that the sailors that were on board that ship did experience, some of them, fits of very irrational behavior. And that they would vanish from sight. There's one case, one story, where they were having a fight in a bar room and they just vanished. And after a little while, they were back. They came back into view, but they became invisible for a while. Is that true? Well, I don't know. But that story is out there. That story is there. Now, I told Leah from Tennessee that, she said, have you heard of, what happened to any of these sailors afterward? Yes, I have. And I was told by someone who said he had met and knew some of these guys. Where he met them, I cannot say. Under what circumstances, I cannot say. But and it's only because I don't have that person's permission to tell you. If that person wants to tell you, there is still time for that person to call, but has to happen like right now. What I was told was that all of those stories that we've just been talking about were true. The things that happened to these sailors, to these crewmen from the Philadelphia experiment. All of those things that we've talked about happening to them, I was told that's true and more. I wasn't told what the more is, but I was told that it was true. And as I said, I was told that by someone who told me, who claimed to me to have seen them, met them in person, and had conversations with them on a number of occasions. Now, again, can I vet that? Can I guarantee that that's true? No. But I can tell you it was told to me by someone who, as far as I know, has never told me a lie. And but it's pretty horrific stuff, isn't it? Well, the Philadelphia experiment, of course, it's always worth talking about because it's just flat interesting, mysterious. The kind of thing, if it's not true, we wish it was true. Because it's just so doggone interesting. But time has passed now since Carlos Allende made his statements. Time has passed since the newspaper published his last statements to the press. And we are now hearing NASA talking about building constructing the 100-year starship, and that it will have this new, completely new electromagnetic propulsion system. And that sounds very, very much like what Carlos Allende told the newspaper, doesn't it? Maybe it's not exactly the same, but the point is, he said what he said in 1986. So, events seem to be shoring up the Allende story. Is it perhaps fictional? Is it perhaps not true at all? Yes, that's a possibility. But I'll tell you something. If it's a fictional story, Carlos Allende colored in so many details that no fiction writer has ever been able to color in before. He put in details that really kind of match what we do think we understand about physics. But they match things they didn't understand about physics in 1986. You see the point? What he's describing gets into the quantum physics level. And in 1986, we weren't there. I don't know. Quite an interesting story, and one that I'm sure we will all be debating about for years and years to come. Well, it's been a joy and a pleasure to be with you this evening, and it's time for us to bring this starship in for a landing. So, my friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you wish to call me, just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long everybody.